You can do everything right in your career. Work hard, build your reputation, land what most people would call the dream job, and still lose it. Just ask Wendy Petrie, who discovered firsthand after years as a familiar face reading the 6 p.m. news to New Zealanders, that sometimes it's not about how well you do. It's about timing, the economy, and decisions made above your head.
People are saying, oh, you must love being at home now with the children in the afternoons. I'll be like, no, it's 5 o'clock. I'm getting my hair and makeup done and I'm about to go on live television to the nation. I don't want to be home here unloading the dishwasher and trying to figure out what's for dinner. Took me a long time.
Okay, so reinvention time. The what now that so many of us eventually have to face when life gets unpredictable. Wendy decided she was ready to step into the total unknown and become a business owner.
So scary when you're putting your house on it and you're putting your whole lives on it.
I'll bet, yeah.
And you're in your mid-50s.
Yeah.
What? There's a lot of tears.
Making a move like that later on in your career, well, it's risky. And while there's a lot of glossy stories around about what it's like to become a business owner, the reality is often hard work and a huge learning curve.
Had I not had that kind of cavalier, naive attitude, I probably wouldn't have bought a business. And then, you know, if I'd known how hard it was and if I'd known the struggles and the setbacks and the challenges, I wouldn't have done it. And so I'm glad that we did because the reward is massive. But it was, yeah, definitely a lot.
So welcome to Making Sense. It's the podcast for people who want financial freedom without giving up their coffee. I'm Frances Cook, a financial journalist and fellow financial freedom seeker who makes money simple for you. Today, we're getting real about what it actually takes to start again. The risk, the reality, and what reinvention really costs. This episode of Making Sense is brought to you in partnership with Odoo, the all-in-one business management platform that brings everything you need to run your business into one place, fully integrated and actually affordable. Go to odoo.com. That's odoo.com for more. Welcome. Really pleased to have you on. I've been watching your journey, just like stalking you on LinkedIn. We all have a good stalk.
Love it.
And I thought it was really interesting because you had such a high profile, the job everyone wants for so long. And then you hit that point of COVID casualty, like so many of us, and then reinvention in your 50s.
Exactly.
What's that like, staring down the barrel of, oh, I'm just going to change everything?
Well, I'm not going to sugarcoat it. It is challenging and daunting and all of those things. It's not like you suddenly hit your mid-50s and go, I think I'm going to start a new business in an industry that I don't know anything about yet. But now that I'm 6 months in, I would say you can do anything anytime at any age. And that's been really empowering for me. And I hope it is helpful to other people as well.
Yeah, 100%. It's really funny, isn't it? Because you spend so long building this life, I assume because you quite like it that way, and then it sort of gets all like tossed up in the air. But yet I am talking to so many people that's happening to all the time. I mean, have you had friends and family sort of have to go through the reinvention as well?
Change happens to everyone. You know, no matter where you are, no matter what stage of your life, things are going to happen and things are going to change. So for me, it was about redefining who I was and what is my next chapter. And once I got my head around that, it was exciting. And what else can I do?
Yeah. You can really build something for yourself. And I think sort of when you come to the end, I mean, well, it's not the end of your journey. You're living it right now. But, you know, you hit an end point where it's like, okay, here we go. I went through a thing and I'm in a good spot now. At the beginning of it, a bit freaky though, right? When it first happened and you realized TVNZ job going, was that quite sudden?
Yeah, it was sudden. It was in the middle of COVID. We'd just been through lockdown. TVNZ, we went into two teams. I was in the red team and Simon was heading up the blue team. And we were completely separate. And that was great for keeping safe. But then all of a sudden, I became a weird sideshow to the news. And that was really weird to see my name in the papers. I think the Herald called me the highest profile casualty of COVID, which was a very, very strange time. And it was, I think it took me a long time to get over it. I kept saying to myself, that is not me. That doesn't define me. That was my job. But as much as you say that, I think I did define myself by my job. And 14 years, I had children grow up. I hadn't been around for the afternoon. All of a sudden, I was at home in the afternoon, you know, unloading the dishwasher, and people are saying, oh, you must love being at home now with the children in the afternoons. I'll be like, no, it's 5 o'clock. I'm getting my hair and makeup done and I'm about to go on live television to the nation. I don't want to be home here unloading the dishwasher and trying to figure out what's for dinner. So it was a real readjustment, and it took me a while. It took me a long time.
It's funny how you mentioned that identity part, because I so hear you on that. When I left sort of the mainstream newsroom journalism to go and do my own thing independently, it wasn't entirely a choice for me either. It was a little bit of situation thrust upon me and then making the best of it. And I've done so much in the financial space, and so much of what I've talked to people about is, you know, it gives you independence and you can't define yourself by your job. And yet I still found myself having a little bit of an identity crisis, even after I had been working on that the whole time and knowing I needed to guard against it. It was still part of my identity. It really seeps in deep, doesn't it? What you do for work, it's so much of your day. So of course it's so much of your identity, I feel.
I agree. And it took a long time for me to separate myself from that news anchor identity. And who else am I? What is my next chapter? That doesn't define me. That chapter was my life and I love that life. And maybe I didn't choose to be made redundant, but it was going to happen at some time.
And of course, there's the financial aspect of it too. How prepared were you to have this spanner thrown in the works of your financial life?
Yeah, I wasn't prepared. I should have been more prepared now I look back on it. But are you ever prepared to lose your job? The thing is, what was scary about it was we were in the midst of COVID. I was looking around. I didn't see a lot of other news anchor jobs out there.
It's not so many.
It's not like there's a little news anchor job that I can just move on to. So you really are thinking, what am I going to do next? We're in the middle of COVID. And let's face it, the media in the last few years has changed heaps. And it's not for the better. Like, we are lean, mean machines these days, because the old days, the heydays of media are gone. And our kids are not watching the news the way we watch the news. So we have to adapt. We've had to change. And the whole media landscape has changed. So perhaps that was just the start of something that was coming. And we're all having to adapt.
Yeah. Do you think it'll ever go back to what it was? Or are we just stuck here?
I don't think so. I mean, it's just our children. There's so much going on in the digital world and the digital space. And how do we get their attention? How do we get our kids' attention? Because news is important. It's probably more important than ever. And when my 16-year-old son talks about something he's seen on Snapchat or TikTok, and I always say, well, what's your source? And he doesn't know his source. And it's like fake news. You know, it's never been more important yet. It's so diluted now, and it is. It's a different landscape, and it is a bit frightening.
Yeah, it absolutely freaks me out. I mean, we've got very young children. I've got my children are totally different ends of the scale from yours, and we're still having those conversations of what will we do when they want smartphones? How will we handle that? I don't know. Yeah. I just know that it worries me. It freaks me out. But anyway, coming back to the...
Could go on the parenting, down the parenting route.
I could do a parenting podcast. I'm down. If you want to switch right now, I'll do it. Tell me your secrets. I've seen that your children seem very accomplished. So maybe we could do that. I was going to say, where did you start in terms of being like, okay, reset. What am I going to do next? Did you like sit down pros and cons list, or like, what did you do?
Yeah, I probably should have done that. No, I don't know if I did. Well, I was lucky in the fact that I did continue to work for TVNZ, and I still continue to work for TVNZ on a contractor basis. So that was fantastic because I knew I had some work. But then it was like, oh, what else can I do? And so I started a media company doing, you know, MC work and media training and voice coaching and all those things that you sort of learn along the way and realize that you're quite good at a little bit later. For me, I used that one word. It was called diversification. I have to diversify, and what else can I do? And, you know, along the way, journalists, we realize, oh, we're actually quite good at writing. Oh, we're quite good at presenting. And this day and age, you have to be able to get up in front of an audience and present. So all those sort of things are important. So I did a little bit of that, and that's been fantastic. But then it was like, well, what else can I do? And my husband, we both worked in the media. And we're like, well, you know, and we decided we wanted to do our own thing and be our own boss, as they say.
And you're absolutely right in terms of like that there is now that ability to take on other projects. So how long did it take you to start thinking maybe buy a business? Was that months or years?
probably years. So 2020 was when I was made redundant. And then 2 or 3 years later, remember how we went in and out of COVID for about 2 or 3 years?
So well, probably, yes.
2023 or somewhere around that. And yeah, Ross was working full-time at TVNZ on the cricket, which was great. We were thinking, we started just looking at Trade Me and looking at all those businesses and going down the rabbit hole of, oh, that could, oh, I can see myself doing that. We can see ourselves doing that. Due diligence, looking at the numbers. And it's a big process. It took a long time. I would say we looked for 2 years and it was disappointing when you think, oh, this could be it. This could be the job. This could be the business that would suit us. And then it didn't work out for whatever reason. Getting the numbers to stack up, it's hard. And how would I run that business? And how would we make that successful, and could we take it to the next level? There's so many questions, and it's also so scary when you're putting your house on it and you're putting your whole lives on it, and it's very, very scary.
I'll bet, yeah.
And you're in your mid-50s.
Yeah.
What?
We're just going all in on this.
Yeah.
So let me recap to make sure I'm following right. So basically, unfortunate redundancy, had a little reset, recuperate, and said, right, what skills have I got? How can I freelance that and start my own thing? And then sort of once you'd had that time to resettle, get into the swing of things, said, and I also think we should buy a business. Let's go on that and start hunting. So this is a process of years of evolution, really, after losing that sort of steady paid job that so many people think they can rely on. It's funny though, isn't it? Because people say business is risky. And I would say, like, yes, it is, sure. I would also say relying on a job and treating it as steady and reliable and always going to be there, also risky, surely? What do you think of that?
I totally agree, but it's taken me to this point to realize that. And that's, I think, part of the motivation to buy our own business was we didn't want to be relying on anybody else anymore. We didn't want someone to say to you, you're no longer needed anymore. You know, off you go. That was part of it. And you're right. I mean, for so many years, you know, you have a job, you feel like it's stable, but you just never know what's around the corner. And so always thinking about what's next, what does my next chapter look like? What else could I do? What are my skills? And, you know, I always think I don't have very many skills. I'm like, well, I can read aloud. Yeah. I'm really, really good at reading aloud. What else? What other skills do I have? I know it sounds silly, but you do have to back yourself and go think, okay, I do have other skills besides reading aloud.
I will say that is a trickier skill than it sounds. But yes, I will admit not always the most transferable skill.
Yeah. And people always said to us, well, with your network of people. And I don't think of myself as having a network of friends or clients or anything. I don't think like that because that's not, but as a journalist, we don't think of ourselves as having a network or being able to sell things to people, which is completely different mindset as well. Like it's almost like you have to reset your mind to think, you know, I have a good friend that may need some business from me. Then, hello, would you back us? But it's amazing how many people do.
I will say, though, accidental transferable skills, and I found this one, I'd love to know if you've got the same one, being also from the news world, where I am so fine with picking up the phone and having awkward conversations with people, because that's what I used to do for a living. It was often very awkward conversations and asking things that, like, you don't usually ask if you're just having normal conversations with people. And that transferred quite well to running a business and having to sometimes have, as my business coach calls it, courageous conversations. So bless her for putting it like that.
I like that.
It's quite good, right?
Courageous.
Right. So do you find that that's accidentally been a transferable skill for you as well? You're quite willing to just like chat to people.
I think so. Yeah. Like I, one thing I'm good at is just walking up to people and you know, other people are like, oh, no. But I'll be like, just going to go say hi. Yeah. And I don't have any problem with that. And it's actually amazing when you talk to people that they are great and they're happy to talk and share their knowledge or give you a chance or give you a phone number of someone else that you were hoping to get. It's, you know, I think, yeah, sometimes you're just surprised at how people just are happy to help you out and are happy to talk, but it is daunting.
Yes. I will say I found, I think there's sometimes a cliche that the business world must be very cutthroat. And sure, there are aspects of that and you kind of got to feel people out and get to know them. I have found for the most part, people are so supportive and actually want to be part of your success. They want to be able to go, oh, I gave her that advice and look at her using it. She's great. Like that's enough for people.
Totally.
When you were looking at it though, because obviously you had started building up your own business with the speaking and the media training and things like that. But then you thought, I want to buy a business. Why buy a business?
I think we always kind of would aspire to that, but probably it just took a little bit longer than most people to actually make that big leap.
Yeah, yeah. Because it's funny, I have talked to so many people in the business world who've said there's a lot of people who want to start their own business and there's sort of that romanticization of starting your own thing. But that's hard. It's unproven. And you're starting from nothing. And yet there's a huge cohort of particularly the baby boomers who want to retire, have successful proven businesses, and can't get rid of them. it sounds like a weird problem to have, but it is. And so I've talked to people about this strange sort of dichotomy we've got going on. Is that something that you had knowingly tapped into, or you sort of just sort of went there and went, oh, well, happy chance. Here's some great stuff.
Exactly. I think that was. It was probably not as thought out. It was just like, oh, well, we would like to buy a business. And you know, looking around, if you find a baby boomer that's got a successful business, it seems like a no-brainer, right?
Yeah. So what was that process like of thinking, what businesses are out there and how do we vet them? Because like you say, getting the numbers to stack up, not always easy.
Oh, no, it was definitely a journey. And, you know, you think you've found the right business and it suits this. I mean, the problem is there is never the perfect business. The perfect business doesn't exist. So that's what the first thing you have to realize. And then you look at the numbers and do they stack up or how would we do that and make that work? And what do we know about this industry? That's the biggest thing is like, we don't know this industry that we're going into. It's not the media. It's different. It's a different business. What's not going to be AI'd out? I even asked AI, what is a business that won't be AI'd out?
Hey, AI, what are you not going to steal from me?
Show me a business that's not going to be AI'd out. So all those sort of questions are really important. And it's a journey and you meet the owners and they're passionate and they, you know, share lots of things about their business. And then you ultimately think, actually, that doesn't stack up, whatever reason. And then we came across a franchise and I'd never thought about franchises before. Ironic, because I actually MC the Franchise Awards of New Zealand every year. So I meet lots of franchises and franchisors, but then I thought the thing about that I liked was the wraparound support that you get. Being new business owners, there's so much more to it. There's the HR, there's the, you know, there's the marketing, there's so much that goes into a business. So we started looking at that and we found this business, Speedy Signs, and there's 27 franchises in New Zealand. They're successful. And the owners that we bought the business from had been there 23 years. They wanted to, they're looking at retiring or semi-retiring. They still wanted to work with us in the business, but looking to step back. So it was a well-run business and that we met the franchisors and they said to us, which was great. They said, we don't want you to know anything about signs. So it was like, oh, okay. Cause we, you know,
handy.
That's good. Cause we can learn, but obviously we're not intimately knowledgeable about the signage industry. So that was great. And then the first thing we did was went off to a conference in Melbourne where we had not officially bought the business yet, but we were going to and being surrounded by sign owners. And it was just quite strange. It was like being in a different universe and it was, suddenly it's like, oh, illuminated signs, backlit signs, 3D signs, vehicle wraps, banners, teardrop flags. It's like a whole new language is coming out of everyone's mouth. What are we doing? So it was quite challenging. Yeah.
That's so funny because as soon as you said a conference, like just for signage, I was like, how much signage can there be? And then you start rattling through it. I'm like,
you're like,
yeah, that's a lot of signage.
That's what we looked at signage. We were like, signs are everywhere. Like it's literally everywhere you look, there is signage. So it's a business that is going places. And it seems like
literally
even in down times and up times, people still need signs. So it was quite resistant to ups and downs of the market, which we also liked.
It was really funny. Even when you came in today and you're like, see the wayfinding signs. I'm like, there's some jargon. I didn't know that was what they were called.
Isn't it great? Though I love that name, wayfinding sign. It makes total sense. It's like these wayfinding signs need a few more signs to point me in the right direction.
Yeah, and we really do. We'll get you back in afterwards.
Yeah, well, exactly. We can help you out.
Yeah, thank you. I remember talking to someone when I was a teenager and trying to figure out like what I wanted to do for work. And this was a guy who had been a manager in heaps of different industries. And his thing was, he was just like a manager and he didn't really care about the industry. He knew how to manage businesses, make the business work well and the business itself didn't matter so much. It, of course, does, but like less than I had assumed at that stage of my life. And, you know, I sort of hear what you're saying there. It's sort of a similar thing of, okay, I'm going to come and I'm going to learn about signage and I'm going to see how this all works. But at the end of the day, I'm trying to run a business well. That said, I'm sure there was a learning curve. What's been your steepest learning curve?
Oh, well, exactly. I think that Melbourne conference was quite the learning curve because, and my husband and I, we went for a run around Melbourne and he just picked it up like this, where I was like a bit bewildered and he was like, oh, this is a 3D illuminated backlit sign. And you can see, feel this. This is a pylon sign. This is, the lettering is on and this is stuck on and this is printed on. And he just picked it right up really fast. Whereas for me, you know, it was a bit more of a learning curve. But then it's like you start looking around and that's quite exciting because you realise it's such a big industry.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And everybody in any industry, no matter what, and needs it and wants it. So it is quite exciting.
This episode of Making Sense is supported by Odoo. Be honest. How many subscriptions are you paying for right now to run your business or side hustle? Because I reckon it's more than you'd like to admit, and half of them don't even work together. That's exactly why I like Odoo. It's one platform with 70 apps, accounting, invoicing, sales, inventory, HR, your website, no extra subscriptions, no new logins. It's all already there. Starting from $34.40 Aussie dollars per user per month. And the first app is free for life, hosting and support included. Try it for free for 15 days, no card details needed. Go to odoo.com, that's odoo.com.
Working with your husband though.
Yeah.
Bold move.
Yeah.
A little bit at stake there.
Definitely.
And as much as you can love someone in your home, yes, and then find working with them a very interesting thing. I work with my husband on this business too. So can I say from experience, it took us a good year of sometimes doing well and sometimes rubbing each other the wrong way to hit a groove. We've hit a groove now. Don't worry, there's light at the end of the tunnel for anyone listening. But it really took some active work to figure out what are his strengths, his weaknesses, my strengths, my weaknesses, and then how can we hire to fill the weaknesses we both have. So that was a lot. How did you find it working with
Your
husband?
Yeah, well, exactly. We had never worked together before. We'd always had very, very different industries. Well, in terms of, I was doing newsreading. He was more the behind the scenes kind of guy, producing, directing. So yeah, working together has definitely been an adjustment. I would say that. And we're still working on it and learning. He's really detailed. He's into details. He's the details. Whereas I'm sort of big picture. La 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 la. I'll, you know, go out and talk to people and do lots of, you know, networking and marketing and, oh yeah, I did this. And whereas he's just like much more into the details. So, I mean, we have found our strengths and weaknesses, but I think they probably are quite complementary, but definitely sometimes it's nice to have a girls' weekend.
Yes. Break.
And go away, have a little break.
So when you're doing that, I mean, do you ever find that you have to put in boundaries in terms of, some people I know have said, you know, no talking about work in the evenings, or, you know, some people even will have an office and say, if we're not in the office, we can't talk about work.
Oh, you know, I like
some
that.
Some people are very strict on these sorts of boundaries. My husband and I both work from home, so we're not as strict on those boundaries, but sometimes I think maybe we need a few more. How about yourself? Have you put in rules?
I think that we probably need a few rules, because you're right. Like sometimes it's at dinner and you're like, oh, do we have to talk about this at dinner time? Well, you know, can we just do it tomorrow at work? But I think the problem is when you start a business, you know, you're all in, right? You live, sleep, breathe it. And you have to, because you have to work really, really hard to get the business up and running and understanding it. And there's so many things to learn. So it is quite overwhelming. So I think, yeah, we're still learning those boundaries, but in time, I think we'll get them. But I like the one about not doing it at dinner time, not talking work at dinner. I think that's a good one.
Let me digest, please. I do not need stomach ulcers.
Exactly.
Exactly. No unpaid invoice chat at dinner.
Exactly.
You can tell me how great I am.
I'm on time and a half right now.
Yeah. Yes, maybe I'll institute that.
Exactly.
That'd be so good. In terms of, you know, if you look back, and as you say, it's been 6 months now, right?
Yeah.
Since you took it over. And the former owners are still working with you a bit?
Yes.
So that's quite good, having a bit of a transition period.
It's been great.
Yeah. So are they sort of, are they managing? Are they working?
They are our sales team, and they also do our designing of our signs. So, and also from a mentoring perspective, it's been great. So they really help us out in terms of mentoring and, oh, yes, this is probably what you should look at doing for this brand, this rollout, this rebrand. We would suggest you doing this. And so it's been actually great to have that sounding board.
Love it. What made this business different, do you think? What made this the right one?
We sort of think of signs as a bit of a story. And because we're good at telling stories, signs are a story. That every sign you look at has a story or a message. And often when you're designing something for a client, it's about that. It's about what is your message? What is it that you want to get across? And that's really important. It's like telling a story, which we like doing.
I love that. Yeah. There we go. Accidental transferable skills. It's great.
Who knew? Not just reading aloud.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So when you were looking at other businesses and you said you had some that you got close to, but it wasn't right, what were the red flags on those that made you think, not this one, actually?
There's so many things, isn't there? I mean, I guess the crux of it is the financials. Do they stack up? And it is hard. It's hard to find a business that is really profitable. It is hard without spending a lot of money. Obviously, we have a budget as well, so you had to stick within a budget. The lots of businesses we looked at were way too expensive, and we just like, don't think we can risk the whole house on that. Let's just let you know, you don't want to completely mortgage yourself to the hilt. So that was important. Cost was important. Location, you know, every day can I imagine myself driving out to wherever, and that's a big deal because, you know, you are going to be driving out to that location every single day.
Did you have any doubts before making the switch?
Of course.
Yeah.
Doubts all the time. It's scary. And yeah, the last 6 months have been an emotional roller coaster. It's 1 minute you're up, the next minute you're down. Every day there are challenges. The setbacks, there's all sorts of things to consider. There's staffing challenges sometimes. There's a problem of someone sick for a week. You know, all those sort of the shutdown over Christmas. Like, what? Why are we shutting down for 3 weeks? And we've got a half month. All those sorts of things. It's just, it's really is very, very challenging, but also really rewarding as well. And when you get to the end of a month and it's been a good month, you know, we did that. And I'm just quietly so proud of what we've achieved and so proud of us because, yeah, I think it was probably the scariest thing I've probably ever done in my life, you know, and we've really taken a big risk. And so for it to pay off is just wonderful.
It's funny, isn't it? Because I feel like there's the whole New Zealand number 8 wire, give it a go, fix it up sort of mindset. And making a broad problematic generalization here, which you may or may not disagree with, and I'd love to know whether you do or don't. I feel like for some reason that should translate into business ownership and this entrepreneurial mindset, and yet it often doesn't. I don't feel like we have this culture of encouraging business ownership and giving it a crack, and it's scary, but give it a go. And I wish we did because I feel like New Zealanders are good at that stuff. But I don't know. What do you think of that?
Yes, maybe I'm still on the assumption that whole number 8 wire is, oh, yeah. Well, I mean, I do know lots of business owners that are doing really well. But I also know lots of people that work in the corporate world as well that probably would maybe like to look at owning a business one day. So maybe do you think maybe we have become a little bit risk averse and shy, and we're not as bold maybe as we used to be, which is you know, sad. But I mean I think that we are really entrepreneurial, and New Zealanders are good at lots of things. Look how well we do on the world stage in so many different aspects. So yeah, maybe we do need to get bold and brave again,
I reckon. Well, what helped you step forward despite those doubts then?
We had to do something. We wanted to do something. We knew we'd been looking at businesses for 2 years, and we wanted to change the chapter of our lives, to change the journey of our lives. So that was our motivation. We knew we couldn't stay still.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do think you do hit a certain stage in life as well, right? Where maybe it's informed by life experiences, maybe not. But certainly for me, after I left media, I was like, no one's ever going to tell me what to do again. So I'm doing my own thing.
Yeah.
Was there a little bit of
girl.
That for you?
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely. And I didn't want to be as reliant on the next job and the next MC job. I don't want to be relying on that anymore. I'm not afraid to work hard. I've always worked hard my whole life. So That was never a problem. I'm probably a little bit cavalier in my attitude. Like, oh yeah, I can do that. Oh, I'm going to back myself to do that. And then, which is good, because I think had I not had that kind of a bit naive attitude, cavalier, naive attitude, I probably wouldn't have bought a business. And then, you know, if I'd known how hard it was, and if I'd known the struggles and the setbacks and the challenges, I wouldn't have done it. And so I'm glad that we did, because the reward is massive. But it was, yeah, definitely a lot.
It was a lot. Yeah.
There was a lot of tears. Yeah.
What was the hardest thing then in terms of that adjustment?
There's just so much to grapple with. There's always something, perhaps it never really stops, but just understanding the month-to-month challenges. And we had some good advice, and it was just a rowing dad. And he was like, you know, you're new to the business, just trust yourself to ask people if they would like to help you along the way and become your customers. And that just one little piece of advice, which I would have not done that, because I would have thought that sort of sounds, I don't know, desperate. Hello, would you like some signs? Can we help you? But people are being great. People just say, yeah, well, actually, we do need some signage. Come and look at this, and we'll give you an opportunity, and we'll give you a chance. And that's been really amazing. And I just feel so grateful for that piece of advice, because then I did that, and it's amazing what comes back.
Okay, so if you went back to the you of 2020,
yes,
just lost her job, are there things you would tell yourself?
God, there's so much that I would probably tell myself that, yeah, there is, it isn't the end, that this is, there are other opportunities, and it doesn't have to be in the same industry, that you can redefine yourself, and you do need to reset your mind. You're not the glamorous newsreader of 2020 going into a news studio and reading the news every day, and that's okay, that what you are doing now is just as important. So yeah, I think it's been a real mindset shift.
I bet. Has it as well, in terms of the mindset shift, but also the financial shift? Because when you're running a business, I know I said quite sort of casually before, like, oh, it's not that risky. It is still risky. You know, like you're the one who is there in charge of making it work. And a lot of business owners I've spoken to have said they also ended up changing their personal finances to have a little bit more sort of personal financial stability, just in case. Has that been something that you've changed how you handle money at all, or has it just even changed how you think about money?
I'd love to know. I'd love to get some advice on that, actually, Frances, about how I can change that. But I mean, everyone is facing a cost of living crisis. So I have, you know, you do suddenly go, why am I actually buying that? Or why have I actually got a subscription for that? Yeah. So maybe you just challenge every little aspect of your life. And you know, people always say change the small things and it adds up to a big thing, but it is true. And yeah, we definitely used to just spend money that we probably shouldn't have spent. You know, and I am much more careful about it. And your three children are basically a money drain nonstop. But you know, at some stage they will be financially independent, and then we can get a bit more stable, hopefully.
At some stage.
Those lovely money drains.
We children. Love them, but oh my goodness. Yeah. Yeah. What about your approach to sort of risk and money in general? Do you think it's changed at all in this time? Because to my mind, from what you've said so far, it sounds like you've really embraced risk, but maybe that side of you was always there. How do you feel about that?
Oh, I don't think so. I think, yeah, Ross and I are really risk adverse in a way. So it probably has been quite challenging for us, because we're both those two people that we've always had full-time jobs, and that's our lives, and we work really hard, but we've always had a full-time job. So I think probably it was even a bigger challenge than we both realized. But we knew that we had to make a change, and we knew we wanted to own our own business. And so that goal kept us going and maybe forced us to be more risk averse than we normally would.
Yeah. Okay. So it was harder than you expected. What was easier than you expected?
Oh, is there anything that's easier than I expected? Maybe my accountancy skills, because I sort of pay the staff and I do the books, so to speak. And God, I love zero. Yeah. Sarah and I, we had such a good time together, generally. I mean, there's definitely issues that I need to help with, but I have enjoyed that sort of, I never thought of myself as a numbers person and a mathematician, no way, because we always write, we're the writers, we're not the mathematicians, but I have enjoyed the numbers aspect of it and maybe becoming good at that and knowing how to reconcile things. It's just, oh, it's just a delight.
I feel like the thing with numbers is so much of what we're taught about numbers, especially like high school maths, is like quite abstract.
Yes.
And then suddenly you've got skin
X,
in the game.
X, Y, Z, yeah. The power
got
of.
Skin in the game. This is how much money I'm going to be earning. I'm always very interested yeah. in that number.
Yeah.
You know, it's suddenly when it's meaningful, I can lock in a bit more.
Yeah.
How do you feel now? Because obviously there's the sort of, pre-COVID for a lot of people is a whole different person. But then there's a messy middle. There's that whole period of embracing your challenges, embracing change, and then landing here, very different life. Do you feel sort of different and reinvented, or is it like, no, it's just me in a different context?
Yeah, I think so. I think probably when I was a newsreader, I was always felt like I had to maintain this persona of being credible and authoritative and serious because the news is serious, but that's not really me. And most of my friends, well, family will tell you that I'm, you know, quite silly and stupid most of the time. So it was nice to embrace that side of myself and just, I guess, be more human, to be fair, just be human and just be me. And that's okay. And, you know, it has been nice in that respect. And I think I've changed a lot to be more authentic to who I am.
Love that. And you mentioned earlier as well about the idea of the job for life, which, yeah, agree. Unfortunately, that seems to be gone. So, I mean, that's the whole reason we're having this chat. I think so many people will identify with what you've gone through, even if it's, you know, most people aren't newsreaders, but that real, you know, later life shift.
Yeah.
So if someone is staring down the barrel of one of those at the moment or thinking they might be about to, what would you say to them?
Yeah, I just think, especially for women as well, like, you know, a woman might have worked her whole life in a job and they think that that's all they can do. But I have realized that that's so not. Like, you so can retrain. You can retrain. You can do something different. You can, it's that word that I always hated, pivot, and that pivot. Don't give me pivot and don't give me silver lining. But unfortunately, those two words are true. And don't be defined by who you think you are.
Yeah, and what were some of the things that helped you embrace that change that you think maybe would help someone else?
I think when change is forced on you, you are forced to change. But I guess you just have to back yourself. Often you won't really go for it until you're pushed, let's face it. But you just got to remember that change is coming, always coming. You are going to face it at some point in your life. Things will never be the same. And I think you start thinking about that and start getting your head around that. And, well, what else would I like my next chapter to look like? What do I like? What am I good at? And it's amazing how many things you are good at and you can do. And with our transferable skills, you know, you can actually have a great alternative career that you might not have thought of.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. And very also, unfortunately, identify with you. You probably won't change until you have to.
Yeah, I mean,
isn't it funny? Yeah. You get pushed into something and it's often on the other side so much. But I actually read something once where it said human beings like things staying the same so much. We're so averse to change that we will often even feel stressed and unhappy about good change.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's so true. I found it happens so many times where people will, you know, not want to put themselves forward for a promotion or whatever, even because they just find the idea of it stressful, even though they know they could do it. And so, yeah, we kind of do have to be pushed sometimes, don't we?
I know. I mean, yeah, it's sad to say that sometimes you're given the push that you need, but it's true. And that whole cliche about the pivot and the silver lining and one door closes, another door opens, like, stop. But
yeah. Don't say it to me when I'm in the middle of it, but
in retrospect,
yeah,
okay,
yeah,
that was good.
Well, there's masses for us to have a think about that. Thank you so much, Wendy Petrie.
Thank you.
Was gorgeous conversation. Now, if this helped you, send it to a friend and then we can all level up our money together. Until next time, have a great day.
This podcast can only give you general information about how things work in most situations. It's not individual financial advice. If you're after that, a financial advisor is always the best bet.